are back with episode 660 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm trying to decide, do I prefer Mads as a captain or a Klingon?
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm just thrilled to get some new Star Trek news.
Yes, indeed, and I know that there's quite a bit of interesting new programming out there, or some stuff that's perhaps a little less interesting, a little dodgy, but we have some news for you this week, and we're going to go ahead and get started pretty much right away after Edmund gives his general disclaimer.
Yes, it's Monday. We'll be regaling you with the news, which we hope delights you, even if you haven't heard it before, so these will just be good spoilers.
There you go. And I think that we are going to go ahead and start with some news that Gary has already been alluding to.
Yes, I have been. What we're talking about is we've finally gotten some news after I was complaining last week that we had not heard anything. We finally got some news on the new Star Trek series. The showrunner has been named by CBS, and it will be Brian Fuller, lately of Hannibal fame, but he actually does have an extensive resume in the Star Trek universe that we're probably more associated with. He spent 4 years on Voyager and 1 year on Deep Space Nine. He's written several of the episodes as well, and everyone feels he does have a good handle on the universe and characterizations and sort of themes within the Star Trek universe, and they're not bringing in someone who either knows nothing about it or doesn't care about it at all. He is admittedly very much a Star Trek fan and is looking forward to his time on the series. So, while I know you guys were very sad that Hannibal was coming to an end, is this a flip side at all for you?
Well, I'm certainly, happy to see them bring someone whose work I have enjoyed so much. And I had completely forgotten that he also had the Star Trek background as well. So, I am quite pleased. But the story he told of, his first experience being his older brother turning off all the lights and flying his model of the D7 class Klingon battlecruiser through the darkened halls was wonderful, especially since the fact that he turned off all the lights, I assume this was that wonderful fluorescent green glow in the dark one.
Yes. Not to mention that he's actually named the model of the Klingon ship.
Yes, exactly.
Was it just alien spacecraft or something?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We were just talking last time about how there was no news coming out about this, and now we get this news about Brian Fuller, which I think is really a very popular choice among a lot of people. I mean, I'm not expecting it to be Hannibal in space, but this is going to...
You're right, John. We were talking about this last time, and then we get this news. What will happen if they actually set us back in the original universe and we get to see characters from previous shows and it runs for 6 years? Only time will tell. We'll have to find out.
Maybe that's right. Maybe. All right. Well, that's good news, and news that we were looking forward to, clearly. But Edmund, this next one I'm not sure about.
Yes. Well, in the latest round of Hollywood remake fever, the Lethal Weapon remake, it's being brought to TV by Fox, and is going to star Damon Wayans in the Danny Glover originated role of Roger Murtaugh. We still don't know who's going to be playing Riggs, but we do know that it will be directed by McGee. So certainly lots of good action-y stuff, we presume. Just taking another story and recycling it for TV. So time will tell.
Time will tell. Does this sound at all interesting to either of you?
No.
Not really, no.
I mean, I've... We're putting it out there for those who may, in fact, be interested in this kind of a remake.
Yes, I mean, I was, my interest was fading around 3, so...
gotcha. All right, let's see then. This next bit is actually good news as far as I'm concerned. Moving over to the cable world, The Magicians has been given a second season by Sci-Fi. As it says here, class may still be in session for the Sci-Fi freshman drama The Magicians, but Sci-Fi is ensuring future Magic Makers of America won't drop out anytime soon. They are going to be ordering season 2 to air sometime in 2017. The early grades for the series... show promise. Through the first three episodes of season one, the Magicians averaged 1.7 million viewers based on Live Plus 3 data. So the steady numbers, which indicate the series is pulling in far more younger viewers than the usual primetime fare, could be a payoff from premiering the pilot early after the highly anticipated Childhood's End miniseries, as well as online on a number of platforms. So there you go. Apparently, 6.7 million people sampled, which could mean anything, of course, the pilot online. So there you are. I'm rather happy with that. I'm enjoying the series so far. So, very good. And also in the cable world, coming from Sci-Fi, Gary, this is interesting.
Yes, it is. You know, Sci-Fi has announced that they've ordered a pilot for a new show that is based on nothing. And before you say to yourself, why is Seinfeld appearing on Sci-Fi? No, that's not what we're talking about at all. What we're actually talking about is that they've ordered a pilot that is not based on a movie, book, comic book, or pretty much anything before. The the writer of this the show, currently called Prototype, is Tony Jonitis. Bascalope, who recently wrote 24 Live Another Day, as well as Resurrection, is writing this new story. It centers on three unlikely cohorts who inadvertently stumble across an invention that challenges the very nature of quantum physics, a discovery that puts their lives in grave danger. And that's pretty much all we know about this story. We don't have a book to look at. We don't have comic books to refer to. So at this point, that's all we have. And they have greenlighted the pilot for it. So we'll have to see where the heck it goes.
Yeah, but this is quite shocking that, yes, that they're actually going to be able to slap the original programming, original series label on it, which, you know, they tend to do for anything they broadcast at the moment, even if it was made elsewhere, like Canada.
Yeah, I was gonna say, didn't many of the Canadian features have the original Sci-Fi series? So that's interesting, and the cable news keeps rolling on, does it not, Edmund?
It certainly does. We finally have a premiere date for Turn, Season 3. It will be back on AMC this spring. This is, of course, after they did stretch out the actual news of the renewal last year, but it is, in fact, coming back. We don't have a actual specific date, but we do just know that, yes, it will be sometime this spring. We also have news that the actual current governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, will be guest starring as naturally General Lawson, the head of the Virginia militia. Interesting little bit of stunt casting there. They were burying the lead here. Now, we actually do have a premiere date. It will be coming back on April 25th.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it will. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. I'm glad that it's coming back. That's a show that could easily have not have come back, as the article says. And I believe that they even mentioned in there that it managed to surprisingly gain viewers in its second season. So yes, that's always a plus.
Yeah. And also, this is going to make sense given where season two was headed. But also, we do apparently have confirmation that, yes, this will be a 10-episode season building towards the actual treasonous defection of Benedict Arnold. Everything that was being set up, we will presumably be seeing through to its end in this season. And naturally, that also means we will be seeing quite a bit of Ksenia Solo again. So that's a good thing.
Good point. Gary, we have some more news coming out of the cable world.
We sure do. Everyone knows that we currently cannot get enough Star Wars on our plate, and Disney is going to feed us even a little bit more. What they've brought out is a new series for the Disney XD channel based on Star Wars. No, it's not a Rebel spinoff. Well, not exactly. What it is it's actually a Star Wars Lego feature that's going to follow a family known as the Freemakers who build and sell ships from salvaged parts across the galaxy. I imagine they collect many Lego blocks and build these ships. This is set between episodes 3 and 4 in the Star Wars universe, and while they are expecting to see familiar characters in the shows, such as Darth Vader and the Emperor, by no means expect this to be anywhere in canon. They're going to make an effort to follow canon, but at the same point, you will never really see any references from the show in any movie whatsoever. It's just meant to be fun. As the various Star Wars Lego games show, they have quite a market, and they're just trying to tap it, in my opinion, which isn't a bad thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how much I'll really pay attention to it since it's not quote-unquote in canon, but I'm sure that there is definitely an audience for this. Let's see now. Moving over to... Well, we're not sure where this is going to end up, but... let's see. Well, Deadline reports that Bad Wolf, founded by former Doctor Who execs Jane Tranter and Julie Gardner, has acquired the TV rights to the first installment in... Deborah Harkness's All Souls trilogy, which has sold more than 3.5 million copies around the world since it was published in February 2011. Joining writer Ashley Farrow, Harkness will also write several episodes of the series herself. And let's see here. The book synopsis reads, when historian Diana Bishop opens a bewitched alchemical manuscript in Oxford's Bodleian Library, it represents an unwelcome intrusion of magic into her carefully ordinary life. Though descended from a long line of witches, she is determined to remain untouched by her family's legacy. She banishes the manuscript to the stacks, but Diana finds it impossible to hold the world of magic at bay any longer. So, yes, once again, another story about magic that is hitting the airwaves.
Yeah, and it should be noted Ashley Farrow is also the co-creator of Life on Mars, the original UK version, not the US travesty. So that's certainly a good pedigree there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Let's see. Next up on the list, going to alternative networks. Edmund, I figured you'd like this one.
Yes, absolutely. Over on Amazon, in their continuing attempt to wrest market share, or whatever they call it in the streaming world, from Netflix, or eyeballs from Netflix, they are bringing over the new Thunderbirds Argo animated series. It's been a new CGI series that has premiered in the UK last year, they are not only bringing it over, but kind of similar to what was happening with Orange is the New Black. They have actually ordered 4 seasons of 13 episodes. So quite a big order there. It's in collaboration with ITV Studios, who produced that first season. It's a little unclear. I assume that does mean they are bringing that current season over. And then this is 4 in addition to that. This is something where I actually haven't seen any of these yet. Certainly given my love of all things Gerry Anderson, even though given my age, I liked Thunderbirds, but it was really the Captain Scarlet and then of course UFO later on, which really brought me into the universe. But I did still have the wonderful little dinky toys of Thunderbird 2 with all the lovely moving parts.
Yeah, I bet that's going to be in its how many seasons does it say that they are working on here?
Well, it's saying that Amazon has ordered 4 seasons, there's already been that first season, which was shown in the UK. So it's not completely clear whether they mean the existing season plus 3, but it sounds like they may be the existing season plus ordering 4 more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see here. Moving over to movie news. Gary, this will excite someone out there, I'm sure.
Do you think so, John? Because I sort of cringed when I read it, and I'm not making a value judgment. I'm just saying what my stomach did when it appeared on my screen. yes, Transformers has announced a new movie. No, wait, they've announced 2 movies. Wait a minute. It's like a Constructicon. They've announced 3 movies. They just keep packing them together. Paramount has decided to take a page from Marvel Studios and announce multiple movies for the upcoming future. They've announced that Transformers 5 will be released on June 23rd of 2017 with John's favorite director, Michael Bay. Following that, on June 8th of 2018, Transformers 6 will be released with no creative talent mentioned. And then finally, they've announced that 1 year later, Transformers 7 will be scheduled to be released on June 28th of 2019, again with no talent mentioned or in line at the moment. And while I've heard some people mention that about 1 year, that's enough time for them to crank out a new set of Transformer toys every Christmas. And that really seems to be the plan in my book. So,
pure coincidence.
Well, it's nice robot porn occasionally, and I enjoy hearing the grunt, 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 transforming sounds. I think this is a fairly ambitious project for what I still consider to be a rather limited property.
Yeah, it's really throwing a lot out there, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know myself what it is that they exactly think they're going to do.
Is a year going to be enough rendering time? Just the fuck.
That's all right. They can always get more Amigas.
Anyway, so, well, on that, maybe, John, do you have any better news for us than the wonderful
transmission? I think I do. I think I have news that the Han Solo standalone movie has been given an official release date. We still don't know who's going to play young Han Solo, but we do know when to expect him. Right now, the standalone film is supposed to be released in May 2018, and supposedly it's already in production, despite the fact we don't know who's playing the lead role. This is the first of a set of planned standalone stories. They said about Rogue One, so they're already in pre-production on the next one for release in May of 2018. So, of course, everyone's putting the pieces together. And also, filming has already begun just in the last week or so on Episode 8, which is due now in December 2017. So we're still looking at least one film a year. So I wouldn't be too surprised if the Han Solo movie got pushed to holiday 2018 at some point, but there we are. Good news, though, for those of us who are looking forward to all this material.
Absolutely.
All right, let's see. Next on the list, Gary, this is a little bit of interesting speculation, perhaps, or rumor. I'm not sure where to put this one.
Well, yeah, it is a bit more of a rumor, but at the moment, this is where the talk is. And rather than having a delayed movie, we're having a movie pushed up. The movie we're talking about is Warner Brothers' Flash movie. Now, this is not based on the current TV series at all, rather just the character itself. But it's slated for, at the moment, a March 23rd, 2018 release. They haven't officially announced this, so it's still a little iffy, but that's where the sort of popular knowledge is, and at the moment there's no reason to assume that it's not true. So so we get to see the Flash movie coming in a little faster than expected. No surprise there, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Next, we have some news about what's this? More Battlestar Galactica?
Yes,
I see the word reboot too. This is very, very disturbing.
And yes, which one?
Some people may remember, or some people may be trying to forget, Universal has announced a Battlestar Galactica reboot intended to be drawing more from the original 1978 series rather than the more recent reboot from Sci-Fi. It's been announced that Michael DeLuca, who was also a producer on The Social Network, has joined the production team. He was added to jumpstart the film, which has been in development since 1999. So might be about time to actually start getting on top of things here.
I wonder if this is the one that Larson himself was pushing for a while.
I haven't heard distinct stuff about that, or definitive stuff about that, but I've always kind of suspected that yes, this was the one that he was hoping to make, given some of his well known voiced issues with the Sci-Fi series, much as most of us enjoyed that immensely. But whatever we thought of the ending. Hello.
Hello, that was weird.
Yes.
Did we lose everybody?
I wasn't quite sure. I think so. Gary dropped out first, and then you went, and... but
well, somebody didn't like us talking about Battlestar Galactica.
Apparently. And, apparently they still don't like Gary making a comment on it, which you can't do right now.
Okay, then. Well... in the meantime, while we wait to see when he's going to pop in, I'm going to go ahead and talk about the fact that even though the movie has just premiered, and this came out, this article at least came out before we got any news about what kind of box office it was going to get,
mm-hmm.
The Deadpool sequel is in motion with screenwriters to return. Yes, it's in the works, greenlit by 20th Century Fox, and the returning screenwriters are working on the script as we speak. Deadpool director Tim Miller is not yet signed for the sequel, but Fox is intent on keeping the creative team together if they can, which surely includes star Ryan Reynolds. Despite the R rating theoretically limiting the film's potential audience, Deadpool is tracking very well. The long-in-the-works unconventional superhero movie is expected to bring in around $65 million for the long weekend. So I guess we'll find out if that happened by the time that this episode hits the air.
Absolutely. And yes, and I did just get word that, apparently somebody decided to crash Gary's computer. I'm sure it had nothing to do with our speculation about Battlestar Galactica. The machine world, you know, wasn't objecting at all. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, well then I'll go ahead and take the next one. Selma director Ava DuVernay has been offered the Wrinkle in Time film. Let's see. Sadly, it says here, we've only been graced with a pretty terrible miniseries adaptation of A Wrinkle in Time, but that could be changing. As Selma director Ava DuVernay has been offered the gig of directing the live-action feature adaptation by Disney. The project in question has a screenplay penned by Jennifer Lee, aka the writer and co-director of Frozen. Could this be the adaptation we've been waiting for? We shall see. For those unfamiliar with the book, A Wrinkle in Time tells the story of Meg Murray and her little brother, Charles Wallace, as they travel through space and cross dimensions to find their missing scientist father with the help of a mysterious Tesseract. Oh, and there's this kid named Calvin there, too. Okay. There's the book is the first in a larger series. Yes, I think we all know about that. So, a good, interesting choice for director.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it, you know, as they say, this is something that's been talked about for ages, was done badly that one time, and, it would be great to see one of my favorite childhood books brought to life.
Yes, indeed. It would be very good to see what that turns into. That means that we are ready to move on to casting news. And Edmund, you have the first one here.
Yes. Alien Covenant has announced that Danny McBride will be joining the Prometheus sequel. They are, in fact, set to start filming shortly. He is being brought in as one of the male leads. Exact role is unclear, but of course he has been best known for comedy roles, especially Eastbound and Down. So a bit of a change of pace for him. He's of course, joining Michael Fassbender, who is returning as our favorite misguided cyborg. And Catherine Waterston has also already signed to play the lead female role, although, again, no specifics yet. For those who hadn't remembered or have been trying to avoid it, yes, this is, of course, the first of three more movies in the series intended to bring them up to the original 1979 Alien. Trying to fill in the gap between Prometheus and Alien. Even though it didn't really seem to be that much of a gap, but we shall see again.
Let's see here. Moving on to this next one. I'm not sure about this. It's a little dodgy as far as I'm concerned. According to comic book resources, Arrow is going to be bringing back Amy Gumenik as Cupid for the show Arrow. Apparently in episode 16 of the currently unfolding fourth season, which will air in March. No further details on her return were available at press time. Yes, she's been in quite a few shows on the CW. She was young Mary Winchester on Supernatural and was, of course, Cupid in the season 3 of Arrow, and also came back as part of the Suicide Squad. So maybe this is just, again, them trying to get rid of the Suicide Squad on Arrow.
Yes, make us just never want to see them again. But I do love in her interview about it last year, talking about Cupid, is that there really is not much logic. She's very impulsive. It's like, yeah, I kind of remember that. Or I'm trying not to remember that.
Yeah, I try to forget everything to do with Cupid, so there is that too. All right. Also, going on is some casting news for Ash vs. the Evil Dead Season 2. Apparently, Ted Raimi and Lee Majors are going to be part of the cast for the second season. When who is this? Den of Geek was talking with Lucy Lawless about the then impending release of Ashen Evil Dead last year. She did say that she wanted the second season of the series to get Ted Raimi down to New Zealand for some deadite torture, and sure enough, that is happening. Plus, of course, the $6 million man. Starz announced as much Wednesday when the Premium Cable Network revealed that Majors and Raimi would be appearing in the 2016 vintage of Bruce Campbell versus the New Army of Darkness. So Majors, who is a television icon and everything from... okay, yes, we all know who Lee Majors is.
Yes.
And we also all know who Ted Raimi is, but we are happy to know that they are going to be in the second season. I need to finish the first season, quite frankly, but I've had a few other things on my plate.
Yes, you do. Yes. Yeah, but all I ask, and this series is so tongue-in-cheek and over the top, it's like I'm just absolutely positive that at some point Lee Majors will be in slow motion.
Mm-hmm. Yes. With a chainsaw, of course.
Yes. I don't know if there's rights about getting the sound effect as well, but he will have to be in slow motion.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd like the sound effects, though.
Oh, well, I'm saying, no, absolutely. The sound effect would completely make it, but, you know, yeah, I think, you know, I don't know if they have some sort of copyright trademark thing on that. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see here. This next one is something that's right up your alley.
Yes, this is more news about Black Mirror and its move to Netflix, or return to Netflix. They are continuing their pretty much long history from the first series, the first two series of getting some really major A-list talent. They did get they cast John Hamm in the most recent episode, and we're also getting stars like Bryce Dallas Howard and Alice Eve, and directors like Joe Wright, who's done Pride and Prejudice and Atonement, and last year's Pan, but perhaps not the highlight of his resume. That's just in one of the 12 new episodes. This is just continuing the quality that the show has shown so far. So this certainly looks to be an example of Netflix stepping in and getting us more quality TV. Rather than all of those, this is by no means an American remake of a British show and dumbing it down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, I don't know. I keep hearing good things, though, so I guess I'm not too worried just yet.
No.
Let's see. Oh, now, see, this I'm worried about. This I don't understand at all. I haven't understood it from the moment that I heard about it. But anyway, Universal Pictures continues to think that they can come up with this planned, shared, classic movie monster continuity universe, whatever it is. And apparently, the one that's in development right now is The Invisible Man. And Johnny Depp is supposedly going to be cast in the lead role. I don't know. There's no other details about who's writing the script or who's on board to direct, though if it's Johnny Depp, I'm sure Tim Burton can't be far behind.
One would assume, getting an actor of Depp's quality and quirkiness, but for a role where you can't see him seems a little strange, but...
Yeah, exactly. Alex Kurtzman and Chris Morgan are leading the creative charge on the current monster plans, whatever that is, and will produce The Invisible Man. Kurtzman will direct the first entry in the new MonsterVerse, The Mummy, starring Tom Cruise. So they're really throwing a lot of star power behind this.
Mm-hmm. And I see that it seems the Cylons have released Gary from his bondage.
Yes, my computer did not like that remake story. I don't know what to make of that.
apparently not. I guess maybe they might like... You came back just in time to maybe speak to something you know more about than we do. I'm not sure if you know much about Preacher, but go ahead with this casting news.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Oh, yes, here we are. Yes, I know a little bit about it. It's I read the first few issues before it didn't quite... wasn't quite my cup of tea. Anyway, what we're talking about is the AMC series Preacher that's based on the DC, or maybe Vertigo comic book preacher. They have announced that they're recruiting Watchmen's Jackie Earl Haley to play the big villain. You might remember Haley from the Rorschach character in Watchmen, and he definitely does have a haunting presence about him, and so I think he could do good things with it. The villain, known as Odin Quincannon, is described as a small, decrepit man with an unscrupulous iron will necessary to be the most powerful man in Anvil County, Texas. And so we'll have to see. The character in the comic book was a pretty messed up sort of guy, and I'm not sure how far along they will take this guy. In the comic books, not only was he a very unscrupulous businessman, but he was also a racist, member of the KKK, and you know, generally a bad guy. So we'll have to see how far they're going to run with his less than positive sides.
Yeah, even though I haven't read the book at all, when this was announced, there was some very interesting speculation on the interwebs about that apparently this in the comic there's a horrible, vile, disgusting secret that he keeps behind a door that was hinted at for a few issues and then actually finally revealed, and it was one of the rare instances where what was revealed was just as horrifying as anticipated and built up to. So lots of people were wondering, well, nobody spoiled anything, but in terms of whether AMC would actually go that far, or even whether they could actually show that on basic cable. So that certainly got me quite intrigued, if not a little scared.
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm not that familiar with Preacher, so I'm really curious to see what this show is going to be like at the end of the day. And it wouldn't, unfortunately, this being 2016. We have yet another in memoriam section. I'm really getting tired of these, but what are you going to do? Big Hero 6 screenwriter Daniel Gerson dies at the age of 49. And apparently this was of brain cancer. So once again, F cancer.
Absolutely.
So he co-wrote Big Hero 6 with frequent collaborator Robert L. Baird. The film, loosely based on the Marvel superhero property, won the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. He also had credits on Monsters, Inc., Monsters University, and the upcoming Cars 3. Garrison's writing career began back in the 90s with his work on the sitcom Something So Right, as well as Duckman and the New Addams Family. Yes, so this is definitely a loss for Pixar as far as their writing crew. I definitely appreciated Big Hero 6. It's one of my favorite movies that Disney has done in quite some time. And not just because it's loosely based on Marvel, but just the fact that it's really got some nuance to it in terms of just dealing with loss and trauma and all of those aspects as well. It's just a fun movie, aside from the fact that it really tells a good character story.
Yeah, and also, I mean, in a decade that had a lot of really wonderful, more adult-themed animation, Duckman was one of my absolute favorites.
Right? Yes. How about you, Gary? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, GC definitely has contributed to a lot of modern popular culture. And as I think about the robot from Big Hero 6, I wonder how ill he was as he wrote about Hero trying, you know, with the medical program and everything like that. So just a little side note.
Good point. Yeah, it's you can never quite tell. Well, that is pretty much all we have for the news here. I don't have any other news items right on my plate. So I think that we're just about ready to do as we usually tend to do, moving into the episodic discussion. So before we do that, Edmund, if you could please.
Absolutely. Now is the time when we will spoil you silly in the bad way if you haven't seen any of these shows yet. We will basically talk about whatever we feel like talking about.
Mm-hmm. That's right, we certainly will, and we're going to go ahead and start with our bottom three, which all these are average or below. And we're going to start off with The Vampire Diaries, Season 7, Episode 11, Things We Lost in the Fire. Stefan tries to help Damon regain his grip on reality while secretly struggling with his own experience in the Phoenix Stone. Meanwhile, Julian and his men take over Mystic Falls, which causes Matt to spiral out of control. Tyler returns to town for Alaric's baby shower, and Caroline makes an upsetting discovery involving Alaric and his future plans for the babies. And quite frankly, the biggest thing for me that kind of brought this down to average is that I'm just not feeling this whole thing of what's going on with the story now that Elena's out of the picture. And it seems like this show is just gasping for relevance at this point, especially since its spinoff seems to be still doing much better than it is in terms of the writing style. Also in the bottom three, we have Lucifer, Season 1, Episode 3, The Would-Be Prince of Darkness. Lucifer enlists Chloe to investigate after his friend, a 22-year-old star quarterback, awakes to find a dead woman floating in his swimming pool. I also gave this one a 7 because, quite frankly, while I actually like the Lucifer character and his banter, and his self-depreciation at times, everything else is just blah. It's just a procedural, and it's a procedural that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense when you've got Lucifer involved. So, yeah, I don't see how this is going to continue. I'll be very surprised if this goes past this first season. But I haven't been looking at the ratings. I'm just a little bit apathetic to the show right now. It's definitely towards the lower end of my list for Monday night shows. That goes without saying. And finally, in the bottom three, we have Grimm, Season 5, Episode 8, A Reptile Dysfunction. Oh, I see what you did there. A secret government agency takes Nick into the heart of their Portland Operations Center. At the same time, he and Hank investigate the possibility that a famous lake monster is responsible for the death of a tourist. Elsewhere, Rosalie's past comes back to haunt her, and Captain Renard continues to support a candidate for mayor. And this one came in at an average of 6.5. And Gary, you didn't seem to like this much more than I did.
Oh, geez. No, this was... I almost should have been ready when we had the title being A Reptile Dysfunction that we were going to be having a rough time of it, because this was I guess I don't want to say that it was horrible, but the thing was it didn't really move anything anywhere. We have, you know, we have Trebles talking about, you know, giving a bunch of information which really didn't advance anything forward other than finding out who it was that was killed. And then you have, I guess we'll start calling her Eve, who at first seemed brain dead or something like that. Now she's sort of rather talkative, but at the same time still not her old self. So that sort of has me scratching my head. Then you have this, I guess, ex-boyfriend of Rosalie, but or at least we have hints of it. But again, really nothing much other than her having received a second letter. So this episode was just, I'm assuming, was full of setup, and I really like when they keep moving things forward, and I didn't feel that it really did. It did. I mean, it was just like a big exposition episode to me. Is that sort of your feel on it, or?
I guess it seemed like the Vezin of the week was a little weak, to use another turn of phrase.
You mean the creature from the lagoon?
Yeah, it just didn't really do much for me. So everything else, yeah, was just transitionary and just kind of pushing the story along. And I guess we're waiting for things to actually happen, and it didn't take place in this episode. It talked about a lot of things, but not a lot happened. So it didn't leave me with anything memorable to really work with. Let's put it that way.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think what we'll go ahead and do is wrap this particular episode up here. And when we come back next time, we will go into the top three of the week and then as much episodic discussion as we can pack into the hour. So until next time.
John, hold on one second. I do have late breaking news.
Oh, very late breaking news.
Yes.
Go for it.
And it is more casting news.
All right, then.
The latest addition to the Twin Peaks cast is Ashley Judd. It has been reported by Deadline. Of course, naturally, no details on the role, but Deadline also shared that co-creator Mark Frost's 90-year-old father, Warren Frost, who played Dr. Will Hayward on the original show, is also on board to return in a cameo.
Well, I was wondering when they were going to announce it.
So just a final bit of Twin Peaks goodness to round out the show for you, John.
Yes, that's always welcome. It just seems like they keep adding more and more good people to this cast.
Yes, indeed.
I can't wait for next year. Just got to crank out a few episodes, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I'm sure he's going to crank out plenty of episodes. All right, well, like I said, we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up here. Next time, more episodic discussion.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth. on Twitter at Critical Myth or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.